We need to back up into chapter 29 and get a running start on this chapter, even though we have a lot to cover. We need to kind of get an understanding of what's going on. Jacob has fled from his brother Esau's anger. He's living with his uncle Laban, and he has just received his wives. Yes, you heard me right, wives. He wanted to marry Rachel, worked 7 years for her. And the wedding night, he went into the tent and woke up the next morning, and behold, it was Leah, her sister. And so he ended up with two wives as opposed to the one wife. And the sad thing is, in verse 30 of chapter 29, it says that he went in also to Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than Leah, and served with him, that is for Laban, for 7 years longer. Now, verse 31, and when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, and Rachel was barren, and Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction, and now therefore my husband will love me. And she conceived again, and she bare a son, and she said, behold, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me a son also. And she called his name Simeon. And so she conceived again, and she bare a son, and she said, now this time will my husband be joined to me, because I have borne him three sons. Therefore his name was called Levi. And she conceived again, and she bare a son, and she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah, and left bearing. Judah, by the way, means praise. So this is the situation that existed. He had Leah, he had Rachel, he loved Rachel more, and God saw that because Leah was not really loved by Jacob, he opened her womb and he allowed her to have these sons. Now, as I mentioned last week, Reuben and then Simeon and Levi and Judah, these are the beginning of the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel. So the building of Jacob's family. But the sad thing is that there was this kind of strife in Jacob's home. Jacob is not really showing evidence of being a spiritual man at this point. And we get some real good pictures and lessons of the spiritual life. He is still trying to connive and scheme and manipulate. He's not praying. He's not building altars. He's not seeking the Lord. He's not following really the Lord with all his heart. And God thus is going to break him and bring him to a place where he just has nowhere to turn and no resources, kind of the end of himself. And then, of course, the Lord appears at the brook Jabbok, and he wrestles with the Lord all night. Until finally, you know, the Lord says, let me go because the day is breaking. And he says, I won't let you go until you bless me. And he blessed him. He blessed him by crippling him. It's the blessing of brokenness. And Jacob finally then had his name changed to Israel. So he went from a believer, so to speak, motivated by the energy of the flesh and carnal appetites and manipulating and conniving and scheming, to a broken man who became Israel, which means governed by God. And so many times God has to bring us to the same place. It's often called the blessing of brokenness. And God has to many times bring us to the end of ourselves and break us before he can make us what he truly wants us to be. Now, beginning in chapter 30, we see this crazy, crazy rivalry between these two women and their concubines, which in a sense became Jacob's wife. So he had four wives fighting over him. It's almost, my heart goes out to the poor guy, you know. It's like, man, you know, Solomon had 700 wives, and you read Ecclesiastes, he said he wanted to commit suicide. I can understand what it was going on. Now notice in chapter 30, now when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. And she said unto Jacob, give me children lest I die. Now she's kind of doing that out of anger and frustration, and she's not really turning to the Lord or praying, and she shows quite a bit of evidence of not being really a spiritually minded individual either. And Jacob's anger response to her was, to Rachel, he said, who am I in God's stead, that God is the one that has withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? Here we have a couple arguing. We have a husband and wife argument here. We're eavesdropping on this. You know, give me children lest I die. What do you think I am? You know, God, it's God's the one that is withheld from thee. Now, notice Jacob, too, acknowledged the fact of Psalm 127, verse 3, that children are a gift from God. Lo, children are a gift from the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. And so, if you have children, you need to recognize the fact that God gave them to you. God gave them to you. Now, I know that may be hard at times to think, you know. You almost think like it's a curse or a rebuke, you devil. Why'd you do this to me, God, or something. But, you know, man, what a blessing children are. Christy was up at the retreat this weekend, and Amy went with her, and Bethany's busy, and Sarah's married, and so it's just Jared and I. It was cool. We went out to eat and cruised around and went surfing and did all kinds of fun stuff. It was just a great time, you know. And I catch myself with all my children, my lovely daughters and my son. I sometimes just look at them and think, you know, what an absolute ultimate blessing. Our children have all been such an unbelievable, totally, completely blessing to my wife and I. And I pray God uses them to bless other people, that they become a blessing to others. Children are a gift from God. You may be discouraged. You may wonder how I'm going to provide for them. You know, if God gave them to you, he'll help you provide for them. He'll help you put tennis shoes on their feet and food in their stomach, clothes on their backs. They help you pay for weddings and somehow get them through college and do all that kind of stuff. The Lord is just an amazing provider. But God gave you your children. Just a little footnote to remind you that tonight, lest you're freaking out. And so she said, okay, then take my maid Bilhah and go in unto her, and she shall bear me my children, and I will raise them on my knees, and then I also have children by her. And so she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her, and Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, and he hath given me a son. Therefore she called his name Dan, which means judged or judging. And so Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again, and she bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali, which means wrestling. And so Leah saw that she had left bearing, and she took Zilpah, her maid, and she gave her to Jacob to wife. And Jacob, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son, and Leah said, a troop cometh. She called his name Gad, a troop cometh. She said, boy, there's a whole bunch of them coming now. A whole troop is coming. And so Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son, and Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher, which means happy. And so Reuben went into the days of the wheat harvest, interesting little episode here, into the field, and brought unto them and his mother, Leah, and madricks, which is, we're not really absolutely sure what they are. They're kind of like a duck or a quail or a pheasant or something like that, one of those kind of birds. And he was out bird hunting. He had his hound dog and a shotgun, you know, and he went out to get himself some birds. He brought them back to his mother, and Then Rachel said unto Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's madrigals. Now, what seems to be is that she thinks for some reason that eating this mandrakes, you know, will help her to be more productive. You know, it's some kind of an enhancer or something to get her to be more fertile and produce children or something, evidently. So, you know, hey, I want your son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband, and wouldest thou also take my son's mandrakes also? You know, you've taken my husband, now you want my food. What's the deal here? And Rachel said, therefore, he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. Okay, you can have, you know, Jacob tonight if you give me the duck. This is insane. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening. He's out working all day, and he comes home from work, and Leah goes out to meet him and said unto him, she said, thou must come unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. So the guy comes home from work, he's worn out. She says, hey, I, you know, paid for you tonight. You know, I gave you my mandrakes. You know, come on, you're going to spend the night with me. This is just crazy. This is not really God's design for the married life, that's for sure. And so God hearkened unto Leah. She conceived and bare Jacob, his fifth son. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire, because he has given my maiden to my husband. She called his name Ashkar, which means hire. So again, we are building these tribes. All of these become a tribe of Israel. And Leah conceived again, and she bare Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God hath endowed me with a great dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulon, which means dwelling. And afterward, she bare a daughter, and she called her name Dinah. And now, there were probably other daughters, but this one's mentioned because she'll play into the story of the children of Israel. And so and God remembered, verse 22, Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. So this is the first time that Rachel actually herself has a child. She was barren, and so she gave her handmaiden to Jacob, and now God actually opens her womb, and it would seem as though that she has been praying. God remembered Rachel, hearkened to her, which would indicate, doesn't say it flat out, but would indicate that she was actually praying unto the Lord, and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son, and said, God hath taken away my reproach. She called his name Joseph, and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Now, the name Joseph means adding, and he was the first son of Jacob's beloved wife, Rachel. So he became, and you know the story of Joseph, and we'll get there on Sunday night, he became the favored son of all of the boys that Jacob had, and God had to work in Joseph's life to prepare him. It's interesting, she started out barren, and she was seeking the Lord, and she had to give her handmaid, and then finally she conceived, she bears Joseph. Because Joseph, you know the story, would actually be the one who would save the entire family. God would use him to save the entire family. So you never know what God is doing. We get so distraught, we get so concerned, we get so, you know, upset about our plight, our circumstances, our difficulties, or our problems. But you never know what God has planned, what God's purpose might be. God can many times be doing things that you know nothing about. And it's not always about us and the immediate. It may be that our lives will have an influence on someone else who will have a greater influence than we ever had. And it might not be us, it might not be our children, it may be our grandchildren. They would do great things for God and do wonderful things for God. Things that you wanted to do and never were able to do or allowed by God. So God would use Joseph. Even in spite of Rachel's barrenness, God had a purpose and God had a plan and God had his timing. Now, this covers a period of about 14 years of Jacob's being there in Paddan Aram with Laban. And so Joseph is born. Now it came to pass in verse 25 that when Rachel had born Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country." Now, this is one of the ways God begins to work in our lives to direct us according to his will. You know what it is? By desires. The Bible says, "Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." For a believer, many times, if you are loving the Lord and serving the Lord and wanting to do God's will, he will place his desires upon your heart. And I think that that is perhaps some of the primary means by which God directs us. Now, the minute we get a desire, we shouldn't rush right out and assume it's God's will, because it's hard sometimes to decipher between our flesh and a God-given desire, or our desires and God's. And so it does take time to pray, to seek God, to wait for circumstances, to wait for confirmation, to wait for God's word to speak to us and other people to confirm. But God will speak to our hearts and give us desires of our hearts. And that's a wonderful thing. God began to place this desire in Jacob's heart to want to go back to his home. And part of the covenant that he made with God in Bethel was that he would return back when God blessed him and he would serve the Lord. And so in verse 26, he says, "Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done for thee." And so he had served for 14 years, 7 years for originally Rachel, but it ended up with Leah, and then another 7 years for Rachel again, that he might have her as his wife. And so Laban said unto him, "I pray thee, if I found favor in thine eyes, stick around for a little bit longer, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for thy sake." And he said, "Appoint me thy wages, and I will give it to you." And here's an interesting thing. Jacob has a desire. He wants to go back. He comes to Laban. "Hey, you know, I'm going to leave. I want to split. Give me my wives, my kids. I'm out of here. I've served you this time." But Laban noticed that while Jacob was there serving him, that Jacob's God, and this is kind of just Jacob or Laban's religious verbiage here. It wasn't really that he was a man of God. He didn't really follow the God of Jacob. He just kind of religiously acknowledged, that God has blessed me during this time when you're here with me. And I do believe that many times, unbeknownst to non-Christians and unbelievers even, that they are the recipients of blessings upon believers. And that because of their association or relationship or contact or influence in some way that a believer has in their life, that God blesses them. And God is doing good things for them. And so he recognized that, and he didn't want to lose a son-in-law of this nature that was a blessing to him. And so he says, "Okay, tell me how much you want to get paid." Now, that'd be pretty cool, wouldn't it? You go in to see your boss, "Hey, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to move. I want to leave, I'm going to clean out my little closet thing, and I'm out of here." And the guy says, "Look, man, you're a great employee, and you've worked for me for years, and God's blessed me here. Just tell me how much you want to make, and I'll pay you that." Whoa. Now, it's kind of like almost a temptation, God puts this desire on his heart, and then they start waving money in front of him. It's like, whoa, maybe I could stick around for a little bit longer, But God was also going to use this at this time, to build his wealth as well, as we're going to see here in just a moment. And so Jacob said unto him, "Thou knowest that I have served thee," verse 29, "and how thy cattle have been with me. For it was little which thou had before I came, and it is now increased into a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. Now, when I shall provide for my own also. And he said, what shall I give thee? And Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, then I will again feed and keep thy flocks. I'm going to pass through the flocks today, removing from thence all of the speckled, spotted cattle and all the brown livestock or cattle among the sheep and the spotted and the speckled among the goats. And of such shall be my hire. Jacob was actually working a deal with Laban to take the sickly, the ugly, the scrawny, the reject animals. Normally, the sheep would be white, the goats would be brown and black, solid colors, and the sicker, weakly ones would be the ones that would be blotched or spotted or these odd colors, you know. And he's saying, you know, let me have these funny-looking animals, you know, these spotted, striped, you know, sheep and goats and cows, and I'll take those for mine, and you can have the rest. So shall my righteousness answer for me, verse 33, in time to come, when it shall come from my hire before thy face, every one that is speckled and spotted among the goats and the brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. So mine will be the spotted and speckled, solid brown will be yours. If you see any brown sheep with me, then, you know, you'll know that I've ripped them off. And so Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. In other words, I agree. And so he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all of the goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all of the brown among the sheep, and gave them unto the hand of his sons. And he said, set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob, and fed the rest of Laban's flocks. What Laman's actually doing is, you know, he makes this agreement with them. And so the few that were, you know, spotted and speckled, he like heads for the hills with them. He kind of gets them out of there. He's kind of trying to rip Jacob off, really, is what he's trying to do. So Jacob, you know, didn't really have many much livestock to really start with. And so Jacob, this has always been an amazing thing to me. Many are baffled by this, and you can read Henry Morse's commentary, the Genesis record on this. But I don't really still believe anybody's really got any good understanding of what's going on here, other than Jacob tries to manipulate the animals to produce. He kind of uses a selective breeding process here to try to get the animals to produce the spotted and speckled and rain-straked, you know, animals so that he could have some for his herds. And so Jacob took him rods of green poplar and hazel and chestnut tree, and he peeled the white streaks in them, and he made the white appear, which was in the rods. And he set the rods, which he had the pillar, before the flocks and the gutters and the watering troughs of the flocks. They came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And all the flocks conceived before the rods were brought forth, cattle rain-straked, speckled, and spotted. And Jacob did separate the lambs and set their faces in the flocks toward the rain-straked, and all of the brown in the flock, and Laman. And he put his own flocks by themselves, and he put them not among Laman's cattle. And it came to pass that whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not. So he only tried to breed the healthy, stronger animals, so that the feeble ones were Laban's and the stronger ones were Jacob's. And the man increased, verse 43, exceedingly, and had much cattle and men servants and maid servants and camels and asses. Now, an interesting thing, he'd take these strips and he would off the trees, the poplar tree and the hazel and chestnut tree, and he'd strip them and he'd put them in the watering troughs, and the animals, when they were drinking and then they would conceive and stuff, they'd look at this. Some, you know, it was either the chemicals that were in the sticks he was putting in the water trough, or it was a psychological association, which is rather bizarre, the thought, you know. that they'd see these stripes, and then they would produce striped animals, you know. And but anyway, he had some kind of a system here going of selected breeding. He knew something we didn't know, but he had it together where he was able to see these strong, healthy animals begin to produce these type of livestock that would be his. Notice that Jacob here is very, very prosperous. Again, in John Phillips' Exploring the World of the Jew, has a chapter called The Wealthy Jew. And certainly, there have been many wealthy Jews. I think of the Rothschilds and other Jews, and they just know how to do it, man. They know how to make a buck, and they know how to, you know, work things out to really prosper. And Jacob is kind of a picture or type of Israel here, and God would prosper them. And so he does this selective breeding thing, and he starts getting all of these animals that were striped and spotted, and he could keep for himself. Now, he heard the words of Laban's sons, chapter 31, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and that was our father's hath gotten in all of his glory. So his sons were beginning to worry about Jacob's prosperity. And they kind of knew that, you know, hey, when dad dies, you know, it's ours, and we're losing our inheritance here. And so Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. So Jacob began to notice, Laban looks mad. He doesn't look happy. He kind of looks like he's been chewing on sour grapes. As a matter of fact, he's given me the evil eye. He looks pretty bummed out. And here's another situation, and I'll develop this a little bit more in just a moment. But God first put this desire in Jacob's heart. And then the second thing God did was begin to change the circumstances around him. You know, God many times puts a desire in our hearts, and then he begins to unsettle us. He begins to change the circumstances. You know, I used to like living here. And, well, it's just, you know, the neighbors all hate me now. The neighbors are shooting at me when I go out in the yard, you know. And maybe God's trying to tell me something, you know, I need to move. Or it's just this unsettling kind of a thing where, oh, man, I don't think we belong here anymore, you know. Laban's giving me the evil eye. I think it's time we split, you know. It's time we get out of here. This just doesn't seem to be working out. And then thirdly, verse 3, the Lord said directly unto Jacob. Now, this is the first time we find God directly speaking to Jacob since Bethel. Since he made the little pillow of rocks, remember, and he spent the night with his head on a pillow of rocks, and he saw the ladder going from earth to heaven and angels descending and ascending, descending upon this ladder, and God spoke directly to him. So now he has God's word directly to him. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with you. So he had desire, circumstances begin to change, and then God spoke directly to him. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah out to the field unto his flocks. Now, he wants to move, and as is a wise thing to do, he talked to his wives about it. Hey, I want to move. What do you think? And so Jacob said unto them, I see your father's countenance, verse 5, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my fathers has been with me. And you know that with all of my power I have served your father. Now, here's a little insight into Jacob's service during this 14-year period, that he served his father-in-law Laban with all of his heart, with hard work. But your father has deceived me. He has changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. He saw that, you know, but God was watching over me. Now, if he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all of the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the rain strake shall be thy hire, then bear all of the cattle rein-straked. Thus God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. Now, I want to make a note right here. Jacob's selective breeding with all these little sticks and the little carving on them, really the bottom line is here, he acknowledges that it was God that was causing these animals to produce this kind of livestock that would be his. So we can, you know, we can put our little sticks in the feeding troughs and we can kind of do our little thing, but guess what? It's the Lord that gives increase. It's the Lord that provides. It's the Lord that takes care. You know, we can kind of, okay, you know, we're going to sell that and buy that, you know, and then we'll go here and we'll do this and, you know, we'll make a killing here. Well, yeah, you know, whoo, man, we're going to be rich. Woo, we got, you know, we're figuring it all out, you know. Hey, ultimately, it's the Lord that is the one who provides. And here Jacob actually says that it was God who produced these animals for him and provided for him. For God thus, verse 9, hath taken away the cattle of your father, and he's given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up my eyes, and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were rein-straked and speckled and gristled. And the angel of God spoke unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes, which see all of the rams which leap upon the cattle, arranged straight and speckled and garland. And I have seen all that Laban hath done unto you. So God actually spoke to him in a dream that he would bless him this way, in spite of all his cleverness. It was God. I am the God of Bethel. And he reminds him of his experience back in Bethel 20 years some earlier now. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowedest a vow unto me. And now arise, and get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him. Now, he had asked them about this move, and here's their reply. Is there any portion or inheritance for us and our father's house? We are not counted of him as, are we not counted of him as strangers? For he hath sold us and hath quite devoured also our money and all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, we should do. Now their minds seem to be more on the money issue. Hey, you think we should move? They didn't say, well, sweetheart, let's pray about it. Well, honey, I think we better take some time to pray. Wait on the Lord. He said, well, you know, why not? Man, I mean, all the money's gone here, you know, we might as well go somewhere else. You know, our dad's inheritance, you got it now, and he's nothing here, so we might as well go where the bucks are, man. You know, let's follow the money trail or something. And that kind of seems to be their mentality. For all the riches which God has taken from our father, he's given unto you. Now Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all the cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting, he hath gotten in Padan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole the images that were her father's. Rachel's a thief. She got sticky fingers. She may be good looking, but man, she's not the most spiritual woman to have around, you know? Go shopping with your wife and she gets home and starts to unload her purse. Man, what's the deal? Man, look what I did today, you know? I scored. Oh my goodness, you're going to end up in prison here, you know? She stole all of her father's images. Some say that the possession of these images would give her the right of inheritance over Laban's things. Some say that she was actually a little pagan and was into some of these false gods and statues that she stole. Now, Jacob stole away unawares. In other words, he just slipped out the back door. He didn't want Laban to know that he was leaving, to Laban the Syrian, and that he told him not that he had fled. And so he fled with all that he had, and he rose up, and he passed over the river, and set his face toward the mountain Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled. And so he took his brethren with him, and he pursued after him 7 days. It took him a week to catch him, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. So Laban had gone about 3 days out to shear the sheep, and Jacob had taken his wife and his livestock, and he had split kind of secretly, and he'd gone 3 days on the way home. And so it took about a week, 7 days, for Laban to catch up with him. And God came to Laman the Syrian in a dream by night, verse 24, and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Again, it's an amazing thing that you see Jacob in this kind of carnal state, but yet God still protected him. I think of years in my life when I had kind of wandered away from God as a teenager. And yet God still protected me, and God still watched over me. I am absolutely, totally convinced that even in the few wayward years that I had as a teenager, that God was watching over me. I was cleaning up some of my things in my closet the other night, and I still have these little old black and white pictures from 1969 of this mangled, bent, tweaked, torn up 6640 Econoline van that I drove at that time, that had rolled off of the freeway and had our surfboards on top all busted into pieces and everything. And I wasn't really walking with the Lord at that time. But I tell you, when that happened, I instantly went into a deep prayer life. I just began to pray. And oh, God, help me. Oh, Lord. You. And we're rolling off the freeway. And I'm looking at these old photos of this mangled up car, back doors ripped off the hinges, blown front, and thinking that myself and four other friends walked away from that without a scratch. Completely walked away without a scratch. The doors blew off the back. The mattress flew out. Guy sitting shotgun was sitting on a wooden 7-Up box on a pillow with a pillow. And he flew out the back doors and landed on the mattress. The guys who were sitting on them, woo, they just flew out. The doors blew off the back and the mattress went out and they landed on it. And they walked away. And then the thing rolled off the freeway, and I had no seatbelts on. I just hung on the steering wheel, went upside down a few times. When it stopped, I was still in the seat. And I just kind of let go and then walked out the front window. We all walked away. And I'm convinced that it was God just sparing my life. I wouldn't be here tonight had I obviously died in that accident. And here's Jacob. He's in a backslidden state. He's not really walking with God. But, you know, God speaks to Laban and says, be careful you don't do anything to him. He was protecting him. But notice Laban overtook Jacob. Here's the lesson. You can't run away from your problems. You can't run away from your problems. Oh, Laman's going to beat me up. Oh, Laman's going to, you know, he's going to take all my stuff, my wives, my kids, my flocks, my herds, you know. So I'm just going to sneak out the back way secretly at night, you know. I don't want to deal with it. He doesn't pray. He doesn't trust the Lord. He doesn't put his confidence in God. You don't hear Jacob praying right now, do you? You don't hear Jacob saying, Lord, I trust in you. I put my confidence in the Lord. You be my shield and my defender. No, he's just like, okay, you know, how am I going to work this out? Ooh, we better get out of here, you know. We better kick it into high gear, you know, and go make, you know, put some distance between us and Laman. And here's Laman standing on his doorstep. You can't run away from your problems. I will not solve your problems. You need to face them by putting your confidence and your trust in God. Now Laman overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount. And it says that Laman was with his brothers, and he pitched his tent in Gilead. And Laman said unto Jacob, what have you done? This is a classic little exchange as this chapter still has some way to go, but it comes to its conclusion. What have you done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs and with tabret and a harp? That's a bunch of baloney. What have you done, man? I would have had a party, man. We would have had music and a full-on party for you. And why did you do this? You haven't allowed me, verse 28, to kiss my sons and my daughters, and thou hast done foolishly in doing so. And now a little more reality comes out of his little speech here. Is it not in the power of my hand to do you hurt? I could just wipe you out right now. But the God of your father spake unto me last night, saying, take heed that thou speak not unto Jacob, either good or bad. And Jacob's probably like a little bit freaked here, you know. Laban catches us like, oh man, he's going to wipe me out, you know. And he goes, you know what, I could take you out right now. It's in my power to do that. But you're lucky, Buckaroo. God showed up last night and told me not to mess with you. Now, the interesting thing is, when he hears that from Laban, now he gets real bold. Now that he realizes, hey, God spoke to him, he's not going to... Then Jacob goes off on Laban and begins to really speak to him. You're like, yeah, he gets real brave now. So now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, take note of that, God put that desire in his heart, yet wherefore have you stole my gods? Now here's the real thing that ticked Laman off. You know, you took my daughters and my sons, and you snuck away secretly, could have had a going away party, but the big thing is, someone in your group stole my gods. Now isn't it sad that someone can steal your gods? That's sad. What kind of a god can be stolen? Can you imagine calling the police department? Yes, I'd like to report someone stole my gods. What's this? To have a god that can be stolen is so sad. I'm thankful that no one can steal God away from us. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me, and with so whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let them die and not live. Before our brethren discernest thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob did not know that Rachel stole them. So Rachel's got these gods in her purse, and Jacob's saying, whoever stole them, let them die, you know. He didn't realize that his wife had stolen them. So Laman went into Jacob's tent and Leah's tent and under the two maidservants' tents, and he found them not. Then he went out of Leah's tent and he entered into Rachel's tent. Rachel had taken the images and put them in a camel's furniture and sat on them. And Laman searched by all the tent and found them not. She said unto her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images. So she was hiding them and sitting upon them. And Jacob was angry. This guy had searched through all his stuff, accused somebody and his family of stealing these gods. So Jacob finally, he really goes off now, you know, and he realizes that Laban's not going to do anything. So Jacob was angry. The word in the Hebrew means to burn. And he chode with Laban, so the idea is that he was going to tear into him. And Jacob answered and said unto Laban, what is my trespass and what is my sin which thou hast hotly pursued me? Wherefore hast thou searched all of my stuff, and what hast thou found in all the household stuff? Set it hereby before thy brethren and the brethren, that it may be judged betwixt us both. You find something, set it out. This 20 years have I been with thee, the ewes, the she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. And which was torn of the beast, I brought not unto thee. I bore the loss of it. My hand did thou require it. Wherefore stole them by day or stole them by night? He's saying all the loss that you had, I took your losses. He was kind of pleading how he had been so faithful and hardworking. Thus I was in the day, the drought consumed me, the frost by night, my sleep departed from my eyes. This is what I described as the school of hard knocks. Thus I have been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years and for two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. I accept the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with thee. Surely thou shouldest sent me away empty. But God hath seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and he rebuked you last night. It's kind of a nanny, nanny, nanny. You can't touch me. God's watching over me. Now, the cool thing, though, on Jacob's part here is that he did give God the glory. He did give God the glory. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters. These children are my children. These cattle are my cattle. All that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto thee? These my daughters are unto these children which thou hast borne. Now therefore come, and let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between us. And Jacob took a stone, and he set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, give us some stones. And they took stones, and they made him a heap of stones. And they did eat there upon that heap. And Laban called it some big, long, funny name. But Jacob called it Gilead and Galeed. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore, the name it was called Galeed. And Mizpah, verse 49, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. And if thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take wives besides my daughters, no man is with us to see us. God is witness between me and you. So Laban said unto Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast before me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I may not pass over this heap to thee, and thou shalt not pass over this heap to me. You can't cross this border, and I can't cross this line to harm you, and you can't harm me. And so the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of thy father judged between us, and Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread. And they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning, Laban rose. He kissed his sons and his daughters, and he blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. Now, this is this famous parting of Jacob and Laban. And they build this pile of rocks, and they call it Mizpah. And he said, for the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. It's interesting that this Mizpah blessing has been used as a, or this Mizpah has been used as a blessing, and people have misinterpreted it. They've interpreted it as though it was a blessing, and they'll use it when they're departing. And the Lord watch between me and thee, and bless thee and keep thee. And they use it, it's called the Mizpah blessing. And sometimes churches have it in their hymnals, and they'll, you know, say this Mizpah blessing, the Lord watch between me and thee while we are absent one from another, you know, and everyone cries and they kiss each other and say goodbye. But that's not what it is. That it's just the opposite. What it means is that you are such a sneaky rat, such a low-down serpent, and I can't watch you. May the Lord watch you, you low-down sneaky snake. That's what it really means. It's not a blessing. It's you are a low-down, good-for-nothing sneak. And so I pray the Lord watches over you. And so they built this pile of rocks, and they said, okay, I can't cross over these, and you can't cross over this side. I can't come to hurt you, and you can't come to hurt me. And so they separated, and it was a thing of animosity and anger and hatred. Now look at the strife that came into Jacob's family, and the strife that happened in the division. This is almost like a modern day family today. So he takes off with his wives. He's mad at his brother-in-law. You know, you snake. The Lord watch over you. I'll see you later. You know, I'm not going to come to your house Thanksgiving. That's for sure. No more Christmas family gatherings for us, man. Out of here, you know. And it was the breaking up of their family. It's sad. We need to seek the Lord and put Him first in our lives and be careful that our manipulating and our conniving and scheming does not bring about this kind of division in our family and our household. Andrew Murray's written a book called With Christ in the School of Prayer. Interesting title. And I find that interesting because Jacob did not enroll with Christ in the school of prayer. Because he didn't enroll with Christ in the school of prayer, God enrolled Jacob in another school, the school of hard knocks. And Jacob had to go to the school of hard knocks for 20 years before he could graduate. You may be in the school of hard knocks tonight. Don't make God wait so long before you graduate from the school of hard knocks. Learn your lessons well. Learn to submit and surrender and seek the Lord and pray for the Lord's will and guidance in your lives. Many times God will put us through this school to bring us back to Himself, and that's exactly what happens in chapter 32. Jacob comes back to God. He becomes a broken man. He turns back to God. God cripples him and humbles him, and his name is changed to Israel. Now, as far as knowing God's will, again, I would just point out these thoughts, and that is that God does purpose to guide us. In Isaiah 58:11, the Lord shall guide thee continually. In Psalm 37, verse 23, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. But how does God lead us? Number one, we must want God to lead us and be ready to obey God's leading. Sometimes people say, I want to know the will of God. My first question for them is, if you know it, will you do it? I don't know. I want to know what it is first, and then I'll think about it. You'll never know the will of God. You know that God doesn't work that way? God only reveals His will to those who are willing to do it. He's not going to make His will known to you if you are unwilling to be obedient to that will. And then, many times, God works through our desires, as He did with Joseph or Jacob. He put a desire and a longing in his heart to go back to his father's home. In Psalm 37, verse 4, I've already quoted it, delight thyself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. And then God begins to change our circumstances. God begins to change our circumstances. Doors begin to close. Things begin to happen. God kind of pushes us out of our little nest. And then God speaks directly through His Word. In chapter 31, verse 3, God came directly to Jacob and spoke to him and told him to return. So it starts with a desire. It moves to the circumstances around our lives, and then the specific will of God made known through His Word. We read His Word, we study His Word, and God reveals to us what direction we should go from His Word. Let's pray.